God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, "Grant me justice against my adversary." For some time he refused, but finally he said to himself, "Even though I do not fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" This is God's word. I'm not sure that there's any of us who actually enjoy waiting. Maybe you've had this experience, or you've been to the grocery store and the person in front of you unloads a cart of groceries, and after they ring up $150 worth of groceries and they're told their total, it's at that point that they pull out their checkbook and start writing out a check. And maybe you can feel yourself getting a little bit tense. Maybe you can, if the line is moving slower than anticipated, you can maybe see other people in line that are noticeably agitated, because we don't typically like to wait for things. The same is true if you have to spend any time on hold. We know how aggravating that can be. For myself personally, I remember when my wife was pregnant with our daughter Chloe, and the first two trimesters of the pregnancy for me flew by very quickly, but that last trimester felt like it took forever. And I know it felt more like it took forever for her than it did for me, but I just remember thinking, man, I just want to meet this girl. I just want to hold her. I just want to find out what it means to be a family together, and it was hard to wait. It's hard for us to wait even for good things. Maybe some of you are nearing retirement, and it's hard to wait until you finally get to that point where you are in the season of retirement. Maybe if you are a student, you are anticipating and waiting for the end of the school year or the end of your high school or end of your education altogether, your college. Maybe there's a vacation or a trip that you have coming up in the future that you are anticipating, and it's hard to wait for that day to come. Maybe for some of you, you're waiting for the day when you get married. Maybe there is in your vocation a promotion that you know is coming ahead of you later down the line, and it's hard to wait. Maybe for some of you, there's certain holidays like Christmas or Easter that you anticipate and look forward to, or special occasions like your birthday, and you find it difficult to wait for these things. And on the flip side of that, it's also hard to wait when we're faced with a difficult conversation we have to have, when there's a hard conversation that we know we need to have, and waiting for that conversation to come is difficult. Maybe in your vocation, if you have the responsibility of letting somebody go, giving someone a pink slip or firing someone, and you know that that day is coming, it can create a lot of tension and anxiety. It's hard to wait. Maybe for you, you've been to a doctor and there's been blood work that's been done, there's been tests that have been run, and you're waiting for the doctor to call you back and give you the results. It's hard to wait. Maybe you have a friend or a family or a loved one who is in a period of decline in their health, and you know that they will not be with us much longer, and it's hard to wait and to watch as they decline in health. Maybe you've dealt with discouragement or depression or a kind of spiritual dryness, and you're waiting for the time when that might pass or when things will change. It's hard to wait. In the parable that we're looking at today, Jesus calls us to persistently wait. And more than just waiting in general, Jesus here calls us to prayerfully wait on God while living in a world filled with injustice. When you're reading your Bible, it's important to take notice of words that occur more than one time, especially in a concentrated portion of text. And in these eight verses, the word justice and injustice is used five different times. So it's an indication that this is an important subject of this passage. We're called to prayerfully wait on God while living in a world that is filled with injustice. Prayerfully waiting does not come naturally for us. We can look around our world and see all kinds of things about which we say, this shouldn't be. And it's hard to prayerfully wait. Maybe you find yourself in those situations. Instead of prayerfully waiting, you find yourself asking the question, where is God in this? Where is God in the midst of the brokenness of our world? Why does it seem like God stands idly by and does nothing about the injustice that we see and experience in our world? In the text we're looking at today, Jesus calls us to this countercultural practice of prayerfully waiting on God while we live in the midst of a world where we see and experience injustice. So let's look at the text. And as we look at this parable, we see that we are introduced to two different characters. The characters we're introduced to are a judge and a widow. We're told in the text that the judge did not fear God or care what people thought, and this widow was coming to him asking for him to grant her justice. We know about the judge that he's in a position of power. And this widow, because she is a widow and because you're in that culture, your husband was your primary income, she's in a position of vulnerability. And in that day, someone who's in a position of power like this would have dressed accordingly. And in the same way, someone who was a widow had distinctive kind of clothing that they would wear to indicate to others that they were a widow. So this judge is in a position of power, a position of power to administer justice where injustice has been dealt. But this widow is in a position of vulnerability, needing someone to be her advocate, needing someone to administer justice on her behalf because she's not able to work this justice for herself. We're told twice, the text repeats, that this judge neither feared God nor feared people. Now, that sounds a whole lot like you can hear echoes of the summary of the law, the Mosaic law in there, which is to love God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. So the summary of what it means to be someone who follows God's law is that you love God and love people, and we're told that this guy did not love people, and he did not love God. So this guy is literally, his life is a living contradiction of the law of Moses. In the law of Moses, God made provision for people like widows who were in a position of vulnerability like this. Now, it's strange to us, but when we read about practices like levirate marriage, which is if your husband died, your husband's brother would take you into his family and marry you so that you could be taken care of. Now that makes, I mean, it seems like nonsense in our culture, but it was a way that God had designed for widows and those people who are vulnerable to be taken care of in their vulnerability. In addition to this, there were laws that God put in place about things like gleaning, which means that when you were harvesting your fields, if there were crops that dropped on the ground, you were to leave them on the ground so that people who were foreigners and people who were widows could come behind and they could have food that would be provided by you by not choosing to harvest all of your crops. We read in places like Deuteronomy chapter 10, speaking about God, he defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. So you have this woman who is a widow, who is dearly loved by God, a God whose law makes provision for people like her in this vulnerable position, and you have this judge whose life is the antithesis of the law of God. This widow comes and pleads for justice. She pleads for someone to be an advocate for her. Now, this was in all likelihood something to do with land that had been illegally taken from her, but we simply don't know that. All we know is that she has this adversary and she is pleading for justice, and this judge ignores her. Now, a judge who's corrupt like this, who doesn't fear God and doesn't love people, you got to think that this guy is probably thinking to himself, what good does it do me to work justice for this woman? What benefit will I get if I pull strings and make justice happen for this lady? There's no benefit for me in this. And so he's in a position where he can just sort of, you know, her justice is something that is, it's not an issue to him. He doesn't even care. She comes to him asking for justice. He ignores her, but she remains persistent. And eventually he gives in to her request. Now the text is very interesting. It says in verse 4, "But finally he said to himself, 'Even though I do not fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't come and attack me.'" Now, I think it's difficult to translate into English the sense behind this. So when it says so that she won't come and attack me, commentators think that this is sort of a sarcastic play on words. That's a way of saying, okay, I'm gonna get this woman to stop bothering me because eventually she's going to annoy me to death. And so he works justice for her, not because she's vulnerable and deserving of justice, but because he wants to stop being irritated by this woman who wants justice. So we see these two different characters, and in these two different characters, we see that the thrust of this parable, the point of this parable is twofold. So from this unjust judge, we learn that God will bring about justice for his people. The unjust judge in this parable is not someone who's being compared with God. Jesus is not telling this parable saying, okay, God is like this unjust judge. In fact, the opposite is true. It's not a comparison, it's a contrast. And this was a very common way of making a point in ancient times. We don't use this as much today, but you make a point by arguing from the lesser to the greater. So in other words, you can hear the point that, okay, even an unjust judge would act justly in this situation. Even though it's from terrible, selfish motives, even an unjust judge would act justly in this situation. And so the reasoning then is, well, how much more will our God, who the Bible tells us is a God of compassion and justice and mercy and care for the poor and the widow, how much more will God work justice for his chosen people? The point is, of course, God will bring justice for his people. We see this in the words of Jesus. After telling the parable, Jesus says this, "Listen to what the unjust judge says," calling their memory back to this guy saying, "I don't even love God or care about people, and I'm going to do what's right. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly." Will not God bring justice for his chosen ones? For the people that he has pursued, though they have rebelled against him and run from him? Won't God bring about justice for his chosen people? And this last phrase here, "he will see that they get justice and quickly." Do you ever find yourself asking, why does God seem slow to answer? Why does God seem slow to answer our prayers for justice? Maybe you're here today and you're not even a follower of Jesus, and you're thinking to yourself, if this God who Christians believe exists, actually exists, wouldn't he care enough about the injustice in our world to do something about it? Why does it seem like God is so slow to answer our prayers for justice? We live in a world where social media and various news outlets have made us hyper aware of the injustice that exists in our world. And so on your cell phone every day, you get news updates and notifications, and it gets tiring after a while, doesn't it? To constantly be hearing stories about kids bringing guns into school, shooting people. Hearing stories about kids who, in the developmental season of their life where they are learning and finding out their identity and who they are so bullied and tormented that they kill themselves. Stories of people strapping bombs to themselves and intentionally going to blow up as many people as possible. People driving trucks into crowds. Probably aware of the last couple of weeks what's been happening with Larry Nassar, the Olympic coach who sexually abused numerous girls over the course of decades. We hear about people that are marginalized, people that are taken advantage of, people that have no one to speak on their behalf. What this text teaches us is that God will bring justice. But not only this, from this persistent widow, we learn that we are called to be people of perseverance and prayer as we await the fulfillment of God's just reign. God will bring justice, and we're called to be people of perseverant, hope-filled prayer as we await God's coming just reign. Jesus says they will receive justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? You see that Jesus tells this parable about how God will bring justice. This widow is persevering in her asking and eventually gets justice, but it takes a long time. Will we be people who persevere in prayer and hope-filled confidence while we await the final answer to our prayers in the just reign of God on earth? Here's the question that I think this text poses to us. What can keep us from losing heart as we await for his just reign? That's the question that comes to my mind. What can keep us from losing heart when we see all of the brokenness? What can keep us from becoming discouraged? What can keep us from becoming crushed by the overwhelming weight of injustice in our world as we wait for his just reign? And the answer to that is that we will keep heart, we will persevere when we look to Jesus. And when we look to Jesus, what we see is that in Christ, God took on humanity and experienced injustice for us. The sinless one experienced the effects of sin living in the midst of a broken world. He did not remain distant from it. The Son of God was falsely accused and was handed over to be crucified unjustly. You remember when Pilate's asking the people, saying, what has this guy done wrong? He's done nothing. And as a way of trying to appease the Jewish people, he says, well, tell you what, I'll give you the choice. I'll either release Jesus to you or I'll release Barabbas, who was a known murderer. And they chose to have Barabbas released. So this man who was a known murderer is set free, and Jesus, who had never sinned, is sent to die in his place. Jesus experienced injustice, and he did it for us. In the garden, Jesus was praying. And do you remember what Jesus was praying for? He was praying for the cup of God's wrath to pass over him. He said, God, if there's any other way, would you take this cup of wrath from me? And in the garden, Jesus' prayers went unanswered so that our prayers could be answered by God. Because Jesus experienced injustice for us, we can have confidence that the injustice in our world will not have the last word. Because we see what kind of God he is, that he stepped into injustice, and so we can trust him in the midst of what feels like torment as we wait for his coming just reign. When we look at the cross, what we see is that God's delay is firmly rooted in mercy and compassion. God's delay is firmly rooted in his mercy and compassion for us. And see, the thing is that our hearts long for justice, and this is a good, right desire, a good longing that we have, but this leaves all of us with a problem, does it not? Because if God came and administered justice based on what we have done, who of us could stand? And not just the external behavior, but if God came and administered justice based not even anything to do with our behavior, but with the thoughts and the motives and the intentions of our heart, none of us could stand. In other words, the justice of God is not good news for us. But in his first coming, Jesus experienced injustice. He identified with us in it so that the justice of God could pass over us who have not lived justly. And then what that means is that we can have confidence and hope in our waiting because we know that when God seems to be taking too long, we know that it's for our good. We can trust him. God will bring about justice for his people, which should lead us to be people of confident, hope-filled prayer. When the Son of Man returns, will he find faith on the earth? This parable is not teaching us that if we are persistent enough, God will answer our prayers here and now. What this parable is teaching us is that we can trust God and wait even when he doesn't answer our prayers and even when his timing does not make sense to us. So friends, the question for us today, when the Son of Man returns, when Jesus comes back, will he find us to be a people of confident, hope-filled prayer? As we come to the table today, we are reminded of the promise that God has made to undo the injustice that exists in our world. By experiencing injustice, by taking on himself the sting of our sin, so that through faith in Jesus, our sin could not be counted against us. As we come to the table, it's fitting for us to bow for a moment of confession, so would you bow with me?